Well, we're going to refer to King Saul a little bit as we keep going through tonight, but a lot of you were clapping during this line, so I don't know if all of you heard it. I think it was probably the most important line. She said, God doesn't want your gold, God wants your what?
Heart.
Wants your heart. And that's what I want to talk about tonight. And I know we're not going, hey, I'm going to give God gold. You know what? God doesn't want your service. He doesn't want you to do things. It's not about doing things for him. It's not about, oh, I'll make sure that I do all these good things and I don't, you know, I avoid doing these bad things. He wants your heart. He wants your heart. All those things come from that. That's what it's about, you guys. Turn to Mark chapter 8. I know we're not going to go into 1 Samuel. We'll talk about Saul in just a minute. As we go through this, because I think this is a great passage that I think Saul probably struggled with without even knowing it. But Mark chapter 8, you guys, again, go to the table of contents. If you don't know where it is, it'll tell you where Mark is. Then go forward to chapter 8, and we're going to start with verse 34. Mark 8, 34. We're going to get to that in a minute. This morning, I left off with bad news. You remember? Remember the bad news about sin? Maybe you wrote notes on it, but there was four things we talked about sin. Do you remember what they were? First one is what? Everybody has sinned. The second one, which is maybe harder to believe, is this. Everyone who sins is what? A slave of sin. Maybe some of us haven't even realized that, but we are. The third thing is, it gets even worse. Everybody that's a slave of sin, what's sin going to do to us as our master? Kill us. Going to give us death. That's it. Separate us from the only one who can give us life. And the last thing, which is the worst news of all, is what? There is nothing we can do about it. Nothing. Sin is way too powerful. I'm way too weak. It's the second most powerful thing in the universe, which brings us to the most powerful thing, which is actually a person in the universe, and it's God. God did something. Here's where we talk about the good news. Sometimes maybe you hear about the word gospel. Gospel simply just means good news. So we talked about the bad news. The good news is what God did that we could never do. So we can't do anything about it, but God decided, as the most powerful thing in the universe, the only one who could do something about sin, he actually decided to do something about it. Not because we deserved it. Not because, oh, we did so many good things that God's saying, oh, you know what, you've earned it. We didn't earn anything. We don't deserve anything, you guys. Nothing. We're the ones who sinned. It's on us. And yet God said, you know what? I have mercy to you. I have grace to you. I love you. And out of his love, just plain his love for us, he decided to do something about sin. I mentioned John 3:16 this morning. Remember that? Some of you that know it, maybe you can kind of, there's probably different versions you can go with, but I'm just going to go with it. You probably go, okay, I kind of learned it in sort of like this. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, right? That's the first part of it. That God loved the world that he gave his son. That's the good news. God said, you know what? I'm going to do whatever I need to do with sin. And Jesus coming, and you've heard about Jesus coming. He lived the perfect life. He was the only one that never was a slave of sin. The only one. And so he didn't even deserve death. And he decided to die on a cross, was buried and rose from the dead. This is what God did in order to rescue us from sin. And you're like, how did that happen? What is the deal with Jesus dying on the cross? What does that all mean? It means two things. And if you're writing notes, I would write this down, okay? That Jesus, when he died on the cross, so you write that down. Jesus, when he died on the cross, was our, and just write number one and number two. He was number one, our substitute. And number two, our ransom. He was a lot of other things. He did a lot of things on the cross, but I'm just going to talk about two main things that helped me remember what Jesus did, what God did for us. Jesus was our substitute. What does that mean? Both of these words, I think we know what they mean. Like, we deal with the word substitute all the time. Anybody here in sports? What's a sub in sports? Somebody who goes in, if somebody is your sub, what do? They go in your place and play your position for you, right? While you get some rest until you go in. You ever had a substitute teacher? I know you love those days. But anyway, a substitute teacher is somebody who comes in and takes the place of your normal teacher. We know what a substitute is. Jesus was our substitute. We're the ones that should be dying on a cross. We're the ones that deserve death. Remember, we deserve death because any sin, the penalty for it, the punishment for it is death. Jesus died for everyone's sin. The sin of the entire world was put on Jesus. He died in our place, our substitute. The second thing that Jesus was, what did I say? He was a what? A ransom. What's a ransom? I think you guys know what a ransom is. If somebody got kidnapped, they got taken from you. Let's say somebody in your family got taken from you, and then you got this note from the people who kidnapped that person. What do we call that note? A ransom note, yeah. It's a ransom note because in that note, it tells you how much you have to pay in order to get that person back. Now, if it was your little brother, I don't know if you'd pay it, but whatever. But you know, but somebody you love, let's say somebody you really love, and you're like, man, you would probably go, I'm gonna pay whatever it takes. This is kind of like what happened. It's like God went to sin as our master and said, I want to set PJ free. He did the same thing with all of you. I want to set this person free. I love them. Give me your ransom note. And sin wrote out that it's gonna cost God the life of his son. You put your son to death, and that's the only price that will set this person free. That's a huge price. I don't know anybody that would pay that for somebody that's a stranger or for somebody that's an enemy or for somebody that doesn't respond to God at all. But God did that while we were still his enemies. He loved us so much that Jesus died for us. That makes sense? I mean, maybe it doesn't make sense, but do you get what I'm saying? I mean, that's the love of God. Think about that. He got this ransom note, and if I was standing there next to sin, I just imagine myself, like, God gets this note. Okay, you know what? It's going to cost my son's life. I would go, well, that's it. There's no way he's going to pay that. And he goes, and he looks at me, and he looked at you, and he went, okay, I love you that much. I'll do it. And so Jesus, which John chapter 1 says, Jesus was actually God himself in the flesh, came, lived that perfect life, died on that cross as a ransom to buy us back from sin, to set us free from slavery to sin. That's what he did. When he rose from the dead, you guys, it proved two things. It proved that God the Father said, your substitute is acceptable. I accept you as a substitute for all these people. When he rose from the dead, it proved that. And when he rose from the dead, it also proved that his ransom price, the price he paid, was enough to set us free. That's what that proved. That's what God did. John 3:16, in just that first line, really says all of that. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son to substitute for us, to be a ransom. But the rest of the sentence says not what God did, but what we need to do. Because when God did that, not everyone is automatically saved. All of a sudden, yeah, everybody's okay. He also gives us a choice. I've given you now a way to have a choice. You don't have to choose sin anymore. The hook is not necessarily just in your gut and you can't do anything about it. I've done everything for you so that you now have a choice. And you can continue to choose sin as your master if you want, or you can choose my son instead. You can decide to put your faith in Jesus. The rest of the verse says, so that God did all of that, so that anyone who believes in Jesus will not perish, but have eternal life, right? So what does that mean to believe in him? I talked about it a little bit last night. But you guys, believing in Jesus, believing in anybody changes your relationship with that person. You ever had somebody in your life that you believed in? Like maybe you say, I got this friend, I really believe in my friend. That probably means that you don't think your friend's gonna lie to you or do something to you that's gonna be bad, right? That's probably what it means. And it probably means you're going to trust that friend when they tell you something or do something or whatever else. I don't know how it is with your families. I'm not saying this is true for all of us, but let's just imagine if it's not true. Imagine if you believed in your dad. Just see I said, man, what about your dad? Let's say you ask me, hey, PJ, what do you think of your dad? And I said, man, I really believe in my dad. You know what that means, right? Does it just mean that I believe he is my dad? No, there's something that's closer relationship, right? There's this thing of like, man, I trust him as my dad. And if I told you, if I just told you I believed in my dad, it really doesn't really say anything until you actually see it. And my actions will tell you if I really believe in somebody or not. It really does. For instance, if I told you, hey, I believe in my dad walks in the back door right now, and let's just say he walked in and goes, PJ, look, I know you're in this important meeting and everything, but you've got to go. I've got the car running right now. We've got to leave right now. It's important. I don't have time to explain it. Let's go. And let's say I never said anything to you about my dad, but my dad walks in the back door and he says that. And I do this. I take off my mic. I leave my Bible right here. I jump off the stage and I walk out the back door. I go, see you guys later. I got to go. Some of you might even turn to somebody else next to you and say, wow, he really believes in his dad. Wouldn't you? Because you know what it means to believe in somebody. Especially to believe in somebody as your dad, that if they said something, they don't even have to explain it. You just go, I trust them. So even though it sounds weird, even though I'm doing something else that I'd rather do, I want to do, you know what? I trust them. And I walk out. What if I said that I believed in my dad? Like I'm just telling you, like, man, I really believe. There's nobody on the face of this planet that I believe in more than my dad. I believe in him so much, you guys. And my dad walks in the back door, same thing. Hey, PJ, I know you're busy. We got to go. The car's running. I can't explain it. Come on. And I did this. Hey, excuse me for a second, you guys. Hey, dad, I'm in a really, really important meeting. I'll talk to you after chapel, okay? Please. Okay, where was I? Oh, yeah, I really believe in my dad. Seriously, aren't my actions trumping what I'm saying? You know when somebody believes in somebody. This is what's really, really interesting, you guys, and I want you you got to be honest with yourself. Some of us, we say we believe in Jesus. We say we believe in God. We throw it out to each other all the time. You believe in God? Yeah, I believe in God. High five. Yeah, woo, we believe in Jesus. But Jesus, for some of us, he has told you how to live. He's told you something. Hey, I want you to love that enemy. And we go, are you kidding me? Love that enemy? Come on, Jesus. I'll do whatever else you tell me, but come on. Anyway, I really believe in you. Really? Don't our actions show if we believe in him or not? What do your actions show? What does your life show? That you believe in Jesus, or like we said last night, the other person that we usually believe in is who? Us. We end up being slaves of sin, but right? But we believe in us. Hey, I'm going to trust me. That doesn't make sense to me. I'm going to do what I want. But I believe in you, Jesus. Doesn't mean anything. Look, if that's what it would mean if I believed in my dad, can you imagine what it means to believe in somebody as your God? Think about it. As your master. What does it mean to believe in somebody as your God? That's what Jesus talks about in Mark chapter 8, because he had a ton of crowds of people that probably were all screaming, we believe in you, Jesus. And he turns around and says, okay, we need to talk about this, because I want you to understand what it really means to believe in me as your Lord. I want you to understand what it means to believe in me for who I am, who I really am, God himself. So here's what Jesus does in Mark chapter 8, verse 34. Let's look at it, you guys. It says in verse 34, then he called the crowd to him. There's a ton of people following. He's really popular at this time. He called the crowd to him along with his disciples. He's going, man, I want you guys that have even been with me for a while, you guys need to hear this too. Because just because you've been following me, like walking behind me and watching me and giving me high fives all the time, doesn't necessarily mean that you've decided to believe in me. Here it is. He says, whoever wants to be my disciple, you want to have a relationship with me? When Jesus talks about being my disciple, not talking about a super disciple, he's saying, do you want to have this kind of relationship with me? Here's what you do. He says, whoever wants to be my disciple must, he says three things. Do you see it? Deny themselves. And what's the second thing it says? Do you see it in verse 34? Take up their cross. And what's the last thing he says? And follow me. You got to do three things. Jesus says, you got to do three things if you want to enter this relationship with me. You got to deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. Let's go through those, you guys, because I'm going, what does that actually mean? Like to deny yourself. What does that mean? I looked up the word deny. It means to say no to. That still didn't help me out that much because I was being really literal. I'm like, say no to yourself? Okay, no, PJ, no. You know, like, what does that mean? And so I started thinking about it, and I was going, oh, denying yourself, saying no to yourself is coming to a point in your life where you have to say, life is not about me anymore. That's hard to do because I wake up with myself every day. And the person I'm with the most out of anybody is who? Me. I'm just with me, man, and I'm taking care of me. And he says, man, you've got to say no to you. You've got to go, you've got to get to a point where you're not always going to go, it's always yes to PJ. It's always what PJ wants. It's all about PJ. You got to say it's not about you. The universe does not revolve around you. The world does not revolve around you. You've got to take yourself out of the picture for a minute. Say no to you. Then he says the second thing, which is what? And what? Somebody say it. What? Take up your cross. What does that mean? I imagine again, like actually doing it. Like, hey, we build a cross and we take it up and we carry it around. Hey, I mean, we'd be able to notice other Christians, right? Hey, yeah, you. Hey, yeah, me too. You know, like, what does that mean to take up your cross? Guys, back then, this crowd would have totally understood what Jesus meant, and it would have totally shocked them. When somebody was on death row at that time, and there was in the Roman Empire, the worst form of capital punishment would have been crucifixion. That's like the death penalty for the worst criminals, was crucifixion. When anybody would be crucified, the Romans would make that person who's going to be crucified carry their own cross to the place where they were going to be executed. When anybody would say that person is carrying their cross, what they meant was that person is getting crucified today. That person is dying today. That person is being executed today. If we were on death row, which I hope never happens, and we said to each other, hey, did you hear about Larry? Oh, what about him? He's carrying his cross today. We would know what that meant. Oh, bummer. He's going to his death. Jesus says, if you want to follow me, you have to say no to you. It's not about you. In fact, you have to put yourself to death. You have to put yourself to death. I thought at that moment, I thought, oh my goodness, literally? And the answer is no, not literally. He must mean something else because the next thing that we do is what? And follow him. So you can't follow him if I put myself to death, like really put myself to death. So again, what does he mean? What does it mean to put ourselves to death? I kept thinking about it and thinking about it. And then it hit me, you guys. I hope it hits you too. How many decisions does a dead person make for their lives? None. How much power does a dead person have over themselves? None. He's going, you know what? You have to say, you know what? You have to just have this attitude. You know what? PJ, you're dead, and you're not going to make decisions for yourself. You're not going to have power over yourself anymore. You're not going to make choices for yourself anymore. It's not about you. And then my question is, if I'm not having power over myself, if I'm not making decisions for myself and making choices for myself, then who is? That's why he says the third thing. And what? And follow me. Basically, in the first two statements, deny yourself and take up your cross, basically what he's saying is this. If you want to have this relationship with me, you want to know what it means to believe in me, it means to stop following you, yourself, and follow me instead. He's really saying, you guys, seriously, he's really saying, you want to follow me? You have to stop believing in you and all of your judgment and all of your wisdom and all of your plans and all these things. Stop believing in you and trust me instead. Trust me even more than you trust yourself is what Jesus is saying. That's what it means to believe in somebody as your God, as your master. Maybe that doesn't mean the same thing if I believe in my friend as my friend, but it means that if I'm going to believe that in somebody as my master, I got to trust him even more than I trust my own decisions and my own judgment. I finally read this, Mark chapter 8, and passages like this, when I was a freshman in college. Up until that point, I think I told you guys last night, I thought I was a Christian. I thought I was a follower of Jesus. I think King Saul thinks that he is okay with God. Praise Theos. Remember when he goes into the battle, I'm going to obey Theos. He obeys Theos to a point. He praises Theos. He makes sacrifices to Theos. I mean, all this stuff with God. I thought because I believed all the stuff about Jesus that I was okay, and I kept coming to places like this that said Jesus was going, look, it's about giving me your life. It's about that kind of faith, which is a lot of faith. It's trusting me with you. And halfway through my freshman year, man, I had a struggle with God. I had a struggle with Jesus about this because I was like, that is too hard. I was being honest. That's really hard. I actually started saying, Jesus, why does it have to be that radical? You know what I mean? Like, why does it have to be that kind of faith? Why are you explaining that that's what it means to believe in you? I mean, why can't I just believe stuff about you? I think King Saul would have been thinking the same thing. Why can't I just, you know, make sacrifices? I'll give him gold. I'll give, you know, I'll do all this stuff for you. I'll give you all the stuff. I will do all these things for you. How about we do that, but I can still just kind of keep my life. I'm going to trust me, but I'll do stuff for you. That's what King Saul was doing, wasn't it? Why can't it be something like that? That's better than nothing. And Jesus revealed something to this crowd because I think they were thinking the same thing. Whoa, take up our cross? Trust you even more than we trust ourselves? What? Why does it have to be that big of a deal? Jesus actually tells them and tells us in the next verses. Look at the next verse, you guys. Verse 35, the word for is because. This is why it has to be this kind of belief. This kind of transfer of trusting and placing my faith in him as my master. It says in verse 35, because whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel, like this good news, because of what I'm doing for you, he says that's the person that will save it. Basically, he says this, because if you keep your life, you'll lose it. But if you give your life up to me, then you'll save your life. That sounds exactly the opposite of what I think is true. Isn't it? I was like, Jesus, no. If I keep my life, then I get my life. If I give it to you, then I lose my life. Doesn't that make more sense? And so it was one of those times again that Jesus was going, okay, one of us is right and one of us is wrong. I want you to think about it for a minute, PJ. I thought about it. And it hit me what we went over this morning. The truths about sin hit me. Let me ask you, see if the same thing can happen with you. Just think through it. If we keep our lives and we don't hand our lives over to Jesus, who owns our life? Who, guys? Sin. We think we do, but sin has just fooled us. Sin owns our life. And what is sin going to do to us? Kill us. Whoever keeps their life will lose their life. Do you see what Jesus is saying? If you keep your life, it's like, PJ, you keep your life. Sin owns your life, and sin is going to give you death. Sin is going to separate you from the only one who can give you life. The only way that you can get away from sin is if you transfer that trust and decide to make something else your master, because you're always going to have a master. Remember, we all have a king. It's just asking who is our king. But we all have a king. We all have a master. And if I don't choose Jesus as my master, what's the only master that's left? Sin. And we're all dependent people. None of us are independent. We weren't wired that way. We weren't created that way. We're always going to choose a master. Whether we think we are or not, it's what we do. And the only way that I can go from sin to something else is if I choose a new master. And God, because of what Jesus did on the cross, gives me an opportunity to do that. I now can choose him. And I thought, oh man, if I keep my life, I will lose it. If I give it to Jesus, that's when I get life. But you guys, I wasn't done with it because I thought, it's still too hard. This is what I started going, you know what, Jesus, I'm going to get really, really honest with you. This is what some of you might be thinking too. If I give you my life, and you're in control of it, you might not do what I want to do. You might not want me to do the plans that I want, because I got these plans about my life. And if I give it to you, I've heard you're kind of crazy. You do weird things with people. And Jesus is like, yeah, you're right. I do. And I said, that's why I'm not going to. I got these plans I want to live, and I don't want to give up those things, and I don't want even a chance for me to give up them. I want to keep living the life that I'm living. Look at what Jesus says to me and maybe to you and to this crowd. In verse 36, he says this, "What good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul?" It's like Jesus says, okay, let's go down this road, PJ. Let's just do this. Let's say, and let's do this with all of us. Let's say we can get everything that we ever wished for without Jesus. You get the place you want. You get the career. You get all the things. Everything works out exactly the way you would wish it would happen. Everything does. Let's say you gain the entire world. That's what Jesus is saying with that. Let's say you get everything out of the world you could ever get, which isn't going to happen, but let's just imagine that you could. I'm like, okay. He says, what good is that if you forfeit your soul in order to get it? I'm like, what do you mean? Jesus says, let's go back to the same truth again. This is a truth. I couldn't get away from this, you guys. I get everything I want. Who owns my life? Sin. What is sin going to do? Kill me. Now, how am I going to enjoy all these things that I worked for? I can't. It's actually sadder. All these things, all these dreams, everything. And then by the time, I mean, it's like the fish on the hook, man. You don't realize it, but then you start losing it. And sin continues to destroy. And sin, it goes to death. And at the very end, you lose your entire life separated from anything that you ever worked for. That's sad. That's why Jesus says, what good is it if somebody gains the entire world? But if you're doing it as a slave of sin, which you are, you're going to lose everything, including your life. I thought, man. Then I got really, really honest, you guys. Like some of you maybe are. And the reason why we're not giving Jesus our life is because it's going to cost too much. Because it's going to cost us our life. And guys, I already know this. The most important thing to every single one of us in this room is our existence, our life. If I asked you to just imagine the most important thing in your life right now, just imagine that thing right now. I already know that that's at least the second most important thing. Because if you did not exist, that thing would not be important at all. Right? Our life is the most important thing to, it's the most valuable thing that we have. We can't have anything else unless we have life. And I'm going, Jesus, you're asking me to give you the most valuable thing as if it's just nothing. Oh, here, take my life. That's huge. That's a big deal, Jesus. And some of you are thinking the same thing. It is a big deal. That's why I've been holding out. Jesus says this. Look what it says in verse 37. It crushed me. He says, or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? Let me explain what that means. I looked up the word like exchange. It was a buying term. In other words, what would somebody say the price is for their soul? How valuable really is your life? What would somebody give to exchange their soul? In other words, if I offered you, how much would I have to offer you for you to give me your life? $1 million? A trillion? 4.14, I don't know, kabillion? I don't know, whatever. I'm like, what? I don't know, that sounds like a lot of money. Some of us might even be thinking, okay, well, that's a lot. I'll take it. And some of us that would go, if for the rest of us that would look at that person that says, I'll take it. We would go, oh man, you totally fell for it. And you know why, right? Because if I give you the money and you give me your life, how can you enjoy the money? And you give me your life, I'm really getting the money back, right? I mean, that's because I control you now. So it's like, I wouldn't, look, and Jesus asked that question. How much, PJ, how much is your life really worth? How much would somebody have to give you for you to give up your life? And I'm like, it's priceless. There is no price. It's priceless. And I'm going, Jesus, you're kind of making my argument here. Like, you're telling me, you know, you're reminding me how priceless it is, and you're asking me just to hand it over to you. It's priceless. And Jesus says, no, 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 PJ. If it really is worth that much, then why are you keeping it? Because you know what's going to happen to your life if you keep it. You already know. Deep down, you know. You know that sin is destroying your life. You know you're going to lose it all. Just a matter of time. Is it really that valuable? If your life really is priceless, then why in the world are you keeping it? And I thought, oh my goodness, what am I doing? The truth hit me. Sin was still lying to me, just like it's lying to some of you in this room right now, saying, don't listen to him, you're okay. But I was remembering and reminding myself not to listen to the lie anymore. I knew the truth. I knew it. Deep down, I knew it. I knew my sin was destroying me. I knew it. It was still hard. But this is basically kind of the talk with me and Jesus. I kept going back to those three things. Jesus, man, why does it have to be such a big deal? Why do I have to give you my life? And Jesus was going, because if you keep it, you're going to lose it. Will you trust me? He kept saying that phrase over and over. I mean over and over, just like he's saying it to you. Will you just trust me? But Jesus, I got all these plans in my life. You're kind of crazy. You could make me do, I mean, you could make me do all, I don't know, if you're going to send me someplace else in the world, I don't know what you're going to do with my life. I don't know if you're going to take everything away from my life, give me a whole set of new things. I have no idea what you're going to do. It's scary. You're asking me to give you my life. I got these plans. And Jesus says, I know. You're probably right. Will you trust me? That's what he kept saying. But Jesus, my life is priceless. You're asking me just to hand your life, something over to you that is priceless to me. That I have nothing if I don't have my life. I mean, you're asking me just to give it to you. Jesus was going, yeah, I am. Will you trust me? He just kept going back to that. Will you just trust me? Then it hit me, you guys. I looked at the two masters that I had a choice of now because of what Jesus did on the cross. Because of his ransom for me. And I went, what am I doing? You know what was really fooling me, you guys? The same thing that's fooling some of us. This master over here, sin, told me everything that I wanted to hear. That's pretty appealing, isn't it? Told me everything I wanted to hear. I went to Jesus. I said, are you going to tell me everything I want to hear? And Jesus says, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, PJ. No. I'm not going to tell you everything you want to hear. Some of the things I tell you, you're going to hate hearing. But I will promise you this. I'll tell you everything you need to hear. Everything you need to hear. Jesus doesn't necessarily tell me everything I want to hear, but he tells me every single thing I need to hear. This master tells me everything I want to hear and not one thing I need to hear. This master gives me everything I want. Everything I want. And nothing that I need. This master does not necessarily give me everything I want. Sometimes he does, if it's also something that I need. But he doesn't necessarily give me everything that I want. But you know what I found out? He gives me every single thing that I need. And really, and I know you guys are thinking the same thing, what do you really want? What you want or what you need? This master hates me. Just has a plan to kill me. This master loved me enough that he died for me. And I'm resisting giving him my life and saying, sin, you go ahead and keep it? I just started thinking about it. I thought, this master, man, he has all the power. He knows what's best in my life. He created my life. He created me to have a relationship with him. This is what my purpose is. He loved me so much that he gave his life up for me. This master hasn't done anything except promise me everything that I want. And I decided not to fall for it anymore. And I did something when I was halfway through my freshman year, you guys. Halfway through my freshman year, I did the craziest thing ever. I looked at myself, and I looked at Jesus, standing there just kind of, in my mind, I was just picturing him standing there going, I'm here for you whenever you want. Will you trust me and give me your life? And I went, this is crazy. But okay, I'm giving you my life. My heart was pounding. It was scary, but I did it. And I went, take my life. And Jesus took my life. And I will tell you guys, he has not told me everything that I wanted to hear. I have found he told me everything that I needed to hear, and he still does that. He has not done everything that I want. But he has given me everything that I need. And I have a new master. At that moment when I handed my life over to Jesus, when I actually said, I'm not going to believe in myself anymore, I'm going to believe in you. At that moment, I was no longer a slave of sin. I have a new master. And get this, it's a master that turned around. I call him master, and he turns around, and he adopted me as his son. That's what he did. He turns around and calls me his child. That's something this master never did. I say all that because some of you guys needed to hear that, because you're in exactly the place that I was in my freshman year in college. And you have the lucky and fortunate thing of actually being at that place now and not wasting more time. But you know, if this passage, if what we're talking about this week and even tonight was for you, and something in your head is going, man, I've even known stuff about Jesus. Like King Saul, I've talked about God, I've prayed to God, I've sung to God, but I've kept my life. And I know that I'm still a slave of sin because I haven't given my life to Jesus. I believe in me, but I'm ready to stop because I need to believe in him. And if that's you, you guys, in just a couple minutes, I'm going to ask you to make a decision even right now if you're going, I know I got to make a decision for him. You might have been in church forever. Other people around you might even think that you're a Christian. That's what everybody around me thought. But you know. And you know it has to be different. And you're done just believing stuff about Jesus. You're deciding to believe in him. And in a couple minutes, if I've been speaking to you, and I don't know who it is, could be one person, I don't know. I'm going to ask you to stand in just a couple minutes. The reason why I'm going to ask you to stand is because I believe that if you're not willing to go, you know what, I'm going to stand up in here to say, you know what, I need to give my life over to Jesus. If you're not going to do that in here, you probably won't do it out there. Because in here, everybody else is going to be excited about it. You already know that. But that's something you can do and say, you know what? This is a decision that I'm truly making. Now, here's the deal. I want you to think right now if this message was for you, and if you're thinking, you know what? I know this was for me. Jesus spoke to me tonight. Those things that PJ was saying, I don't know how he knew it, but that's exactly me. And I need to give my life over to Jesus. I know it. Think about it. That's you right now. Don't decide in a few minutes. Decide right now if you're going to stand saying, I need to hand my life over to Jesus for the first time. Okay? Because I don't want you to stay seated just because somebody else is sitting down. Don't sit there and go, okay, you're sitting down. I guess I'll stay seated too. You decide right now. This isn't about you and the person next to you. Right? This is about you and God. This is about your life. This is about you and your life. The other thing I want to say, though, is this. Don't stand up just because somebody else stands up. Oh, they stood up. I guess I'll stand up, too. Okay. You stand up because God is moving in your life right now, and you know you need to hand your life over to him, and you've never done that before. Some of us, we just needed the reminder. You've done it before. You've already handed your life over to Jesus, and you were just reminded tonight, oh yeah, that's what it means to believe in him. But if the first time is tonight, you're going, you know what, I've never truly placed my faith in Jesus, but I know I need to, then in just a minute, I'm going to ask you to stand. Don't stay seated because somebody's seated. Don't stand up because somebody stands up. You stand because you know you need to stand and say, I need to give my life to Jesus for the first time. Really give my life to him. So if you know this message was for you and you're ready to finally place your faith in Jesus, stand up. Whoa. Don't stand up because somebody's staying standing. Stand up. So if you stood up because somebody else did, it's okay, sit down. But don't stay seated just because somebody else is seated. But you guys that are seated, I'm going to think that a lot of us that are seated, we've decided to place our faith in Jesus. And so I know you guys want to give these guys a hand because you know what life is like there. So okay. Here's the deal. First of all, stay standing just for a minute. You guys are standing up. I admire you. You're a hero to me. I'm serious. When I was in seventh, eighth grade, whatever, when I was in middle school, I never had the guts to do what you did. Remember, it was when I was a freshman in college that I was still struggling with it. And you guys are going, I'm going to give somebody my life. You guys know this. I hope you realize this is the most scariest and courageous decision you're making at the same time. It's a courageous decision. It's also the most humbling decision you're ever going to make. Do you guys realize that, right? It's humbling because you guys standing up, you're saying, I can't do life on my own, right? You're saying that, right? And I'm helpless and hopeless without Jesus. You're saying that, right? That's humbling. That's humbling to say, I have no power. I can't do this on my own. But it's so courageous too, because I'm thinking, all of you guys are standing saying, I'm going to give my life to someone else. And I'm going to trust them even more than I trust myself. That's scary. It's courageous. So I applaud you guys because you're an example to me. I just want to tell you that.